He also had his secretary advertise in the lady for a nanny. Crowley had seen Mary Poppins on television one Christmas. Indeed, behind the scenes, Crowley had had a hand in most television, although it was on the invention of the game show that he truly prided himself. He toyed with the idea of a hurricane as an effective and incredibly stylish way of disposing of the queue of nannies that would certainly form, or possibly stack up in a holding pattern, outside the cultural attaché's Regent's Park residence. He contented himself with a wildcat tube strike, and when the day came, only one nanny turned up. She wore a knit tweed suit and discreet pearl earrings. Something about her might have said nanny, but it said it in an undertone of the sort employed by British butlers in a certain type of American film. It also coughed discreetly and muttered that she could well be the sort of nanny who advertises unspecified but strangely explicit services in certain magazines. Her flat shoes crunched up the gravel drive, and a grey dog padded silently by her side, white flecks of saliva dripping from his jaw. Its eyes glinted scarlet, and it glanced from side to side, hungrily. She reached the heavy wooden door, smiled to herself, a brief, satisfied flicker, and rang the bell. It donged gloomily. The door was opened by a butler, as they say, of the old school. A night school just off the Tottenham Court Road, run by an elderly actor who had played butlers and gentlemen's gentlemen in films and television on the stage since the 1920s. "I am Nanny Ashtoreth," she told him, "and this," she continued, while the grey dog at her side eyed the butler carefully, working out perhaps where it would bury the bones, "is Rover." She left the dog in the garden and passed her interview with flying colours, and Mrs. Dowling led the nanny to see her new charge. She smiled unpleasantly. "What a delightful child," she said. "He'll be wanting a little tricycle soon." By one of those coincidences, another new member of staff arrived the same afternoon. He was the gardener, and as it turned out, he was amazingly good at his job. No one quite worked out why this should be the case, since he never seemed to pick up a shovel and made no effort to rid the garden of the sudden flocks of birds that filled it and settled all over him at every opportunity. He just sat in the shade while around him the residence gardens bloomed and bloomed. Warlock used to come down to see him when he was old enough to toddle and Nanny was doing whatever it was she did on her afternoons off. "This here is Brother Slug," the gardener would tell him, "and this tiny little critter is Sister Potato Weevil. Remember, Warlock, as you walk your way through the highways and byways of life's rich and fulsome path, to have love and reverence for all living things."
"Nanny says that living things is fit only to be ground under my heels, Mr. Francis," said little Warlock, stroking Brother Slug, and then wiping his hand conscientiously on his Kermit the Frog overall.
"You don't listen to that woman," Francis would say. "You listen to me." At night, Nanny Ashtoreth sang nursery rhymes to Warlock. "Oh, the grand old Duke of York, he had 10,000 men. He marched them up to the top of the hill and crushed all the nations of the world and brought them under the rule of Satan, our master. And this little piggy went to Hades, this little piggy stayed home, this little piggy ate raw and steaming human flesh, this little piggy violated virgins, and this little piggy clambered over a heap of dead bodies to get to the top.
Brother Francis, the gardener, says I must selflessly practice virtue and love all living things," said Warlock.
"You don't listen to that man, darling," the nanny would whisper as she tucked him into his little bed. "You listen to me." And so it went. The arrangement worked perfectly. A no-score win. Nanny Ashtoreth bought the child a little tricycle, but could never persuade him to ride it inside the house. And he was scared of Rover. In the background, Crowley and Aziraphale met on the tops of buses and in art galleries and at concerts, compared notes and smiled. When Warlock was six, his nanny left, taking Rover with her. The gardener handed in his resignation on the same day. Neither of them left with quite the same spring in their step with which they'd arrived. Warlock now found himself being educated by two tutors. Mr. Harrison taught him about Attila the Hun, Vlad Dracul, and the darkness intrinsicate in the human spirit. He avoided mentioning that Attila was nice to his mother, or that Vlad Dracul was punctilious about saying his prayers every day. He tried to teach Warlock how to make rabble-rousing political speeches to sway the hearts and minds of multitudes. Mr. Cortese taught him about Florence Nightingale, except for the bits about syphilis, Abraham Lincoln,